You know, there are many, many parables in the Gospels, and lots of them in the Gospel of Luke, but this is one of them that you don't hear a whole lot. It's one of those that's a little difficult to listen to. It's some strong teaching. And sometimes we like to think of Jesus as someone who is there and given for us to comfort us. I mean, that's why we love the Good Shepherd and the 23rd Psalm and all of that, because somehow Jesus is meant to be our comfort. And so it is. But Jesus is also sent to us to make us uncomfortable. And that's, I think, what today's gospel parable, gospel lesson is about for us. It's to sort of make us squirm a little bit when we hear this story being told. Oh, it's a great story, isn't it? It's very dramatic. You have Lazarus, oh, covered with sores and begging at the gate and the dogs and all of that sort of imagery. And then you have this man who is covered with linens and fine brocade, purple and linen. That's the sign of royal power. So this is somebody who's somebody. He's not just your average rich guy. This is somebody who can tell somebody to do something and they will do it. It's a story, though, that when we stop to think about it, has a lot to teach us in our day and age. You know, there's the word chasm that's there. I love that word because it talks about a great distance. And not just a great distance, but something that is pretty difficult to get across. Not only difficult, it's nearly impossible. All you need to do is go up to Wellsville and go to that wonderful lookout over the what they call the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon, and look out over there and see how far away the other side is and how deep that canyon is. And you go like, well, how do I get over there? There's one of those in Western New York, too, near Portageville, the Genesee River. And then there's yet another one that's pretty big. It's even bigger than any of the ones that are around here. And that's out west. We know it as the Grand Canyon. If you've ever been there, you can barely see the other side, and if it's a cloudy or humid day, it's difficult to make out. That's how wide it is. Now, any of these chasms, any of these canyons, are a little difficult to traverse. In order to get to the other side, there's no easy bridge to just kind of go over. If you did, you'd probably not want to look down, that's for sure. But certainly, in order to do this, you have to sort of wend your way down the wall of the canyon, then you have to forage the river at the bottom, which is usually rather swift running water, dangerous in and of itself. And then you have to get to the other side, and then you have to climb all the way up the other side. It's hard going. It's a difficult thing to do. Did you know that in our world, six people have more wealth than 50% of all the rest of the population of the world. That's called chasm. That's called a gap. Six people. They're the kind of people who wear linen and purple. They're the kind of people who eat sumptuously every day. We may eat sumptuously, but maybe Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and a couple of those, but not every day. It's not a banquet in our house, at least in our house every day. First of all, because I'd have to make it, and that ain't happening. But we think about it, we live in a world not unlike the world of Jesus. We live in a world where the images that he's using in this gospel parable are as relevant today as they were in the time of Jesus. But Father, we live in prosperous times. Yes, we do. We are told that the employment rate in the United States is as high as it has ever been. It is at a record high. And this is true statistically. The unemployment rate, the other side of it, is the lowest it's ever been statistically. It is a record. But do you know that most of those jobs that have been made in many cases over the last decade are not well-paying jobs? In fact, a good segment of those jobs are had by people who can barely make enough money to get through the week on the most minimal standard of living, much less to raise a family of four. This is called a gap. This is called a chasm. Now, so in one sense, Jesus uses the word chasm at the end of the story when he talks about Abraham talking to this rich man. But the chasm already exists in the man's life. It is between the man who is banqueting at the table and Lazarus, who is begging at the gate. So the chasm we see between Father Abraham and this man is not new. It's always there. It's just now made real for him. Because this Lazarus, in his lifetime, probably confronted a similar kind of chasm, one that would be difficult, if not impossible, to traverse. The chasm between him and the man who dined so sumptuously. There are a few details in this story which I think are kind of interesting, and they're kind of insightful. If we look at it carefully, the story is very carefully constructed. For every benefit that the rich man has, Lazarus has a difficulty. The rich man is covered in linen and fine purple. Lazarus is covered with sores and rags. The rich man dines sumptuously every day. Lazarus seeks to slake his hunger by simply the crumbs from the man's table. And in the very end, it's interesting to note, not only is the reversal kind of dramatic, where this man is in the place of torment, but Lazarus is in the bosom of Abraham. That's that wonderful phrase. Harry, we should sing that. Rock of my soul in the bosom of Abraham. That's where that song comes from. It's an old spiritual for people who were being oppressed and suffered because they saw themselves and their salvation in the next life as they would be called into the bosom of Abraham. So may it be so with many of those who are at the other end of this gap, this chasm in our day and in our age. Maybe it's the one salvation, one bit of salvation for which they can hope. But there's a very interesting detail there that I would like to, well, actually two that go together. One is that you notice God is not in the story. You don't see God anywhere in that story. Just Abraham, Father Abraham, our father in faith. And notice that the man who is in torment, he doesn't talk to Lazarus. He doesn't say, Lazarus, do me one small kindness. Dip your finger in some water and come and just remove a little bit of my pain. No, he talks to Abraham. He's so privileged in his life here on earth that he doesn't even deign to talk to this Lazarus in the afterlife. He's going to the top. He's going to the boss. He's going to the one who has the power. And he's giving orders again. Notice the language. Father Abraham, tell Lazarus too, just like he did in this world, where he ordered his servants around and told them what to do here and there. And they did his bidding because he was powerful and he was rich. God not in the story. Did you notice that the rich man doesn't have a name? Lazarus does. That's an odd thing. maybe it's good that God isn't in the story, because it would be difficult for us, doubly difficult for us to read this story if we realized the man did not have a name. Because if you don't have a name, you don't exist. That's the way God did things. Remember the creation story? He told Adam and Eve to name things. So as things were made, they were given names. So would they be known throughout the world. This man, as powerful and as rich as he was, has no name. How awful that must be. Talk about reversals. When in Isaiah, God says through the prophet, I know you so well. Should a mother forget her child, I will never forget you. For your name is etched in the palm of my hand. And in this story, the rich man has no name. In this story, it seems, the rich man has no redemption. He is not even in the mind of God. Maybe that's why God wrote the story. Well, what does that say to us? I think Paul has insight as he sends his letter to Timothy. Jesus' stories are usually pretty strong in one way or the other because he's trying to make some points. Not get points from people, but make points, make people understand things. And maybe this is kind of an extreme point that he has to say, you better, if you have wealth in this world, you better be mindful of it. And most importantly, you must be mindful of your attitude towards it. Riches and wealth and power, prestige, none of it is bad or good. It is how it is used. How it is used is what matters to God. How it comes to be that those at one end of the canyon reach across in a bridge to the others. Rather than increasing the gap, which seems to be what's happening in our day and age, as the wealthy get wealthier and the poor seem to get poorer, even though we mask it over with a bunch of statistics that say, oh, it's the best time ever, even when people can't feed their own families, if it were so good, why are so many people going hungry? In our nation, in our land, how many children have not enough to eat and are malnourished, even in our own community? Oh, it's the best of times, or so we're told. Perhaps it's the best of times for the people who wear the linen and the royal purple. And the Lazaruses of our lives, not so good. What's one to do? Can I change it all? Can I make a difference? Yes. Because it's about attitude. It's about changing attitudes. And attitudes change when we change habits. When we change the things we do day in and day out, we change the way we think. And if we change the way we think, perhaps we will change what we value in life. And if we change the things that we value in life, maybe we will act differently in our world. I have made it a discipline of my life. At the behest of a spiritual director many years ago, that when I go out into the street, whether I'm walking or driving, if I see someone who is of a different, say, social and economic class than I am, and I must confess my life is very comfortable, that I at least call to mind the fact. This simple fact, there goes a child of God. That gives that person when you walk down the street or you're confronted on a street corner with the signs and all of that sort of thing, yeah, we can have a big debate as to whether this is a scam and all that kind of thing. It doesn't matter. The last promise we make in our baptism is to respect the dignity of every human being, not just the ones we choose. So acknowledge them. Even if you don't want to give them anything, if they ask, say, please, no, not today. Or no, just say, simply no, no, thank you. Acknowledge that they exist. Otherwise, you are no different than the man in the story. Because he didn't see Lazarus. Even though Lazarus was clearly there, the dogs saw him. But this man did not. These are ways, little things. Maybe we can't solve the problem of the wealth gap in our world or even in our own nation or in our community, but we can begin to change the way we think one little bit at a time. And in changing the way we think one bit at a time, we change our habits. And in changing our habits, we change our values. And in changing our values, we can change the world. That's what this story is about. It's not about whether having money is good or bad. It's about the values we hold. Are we lovers of money? Or power? Prestige? Or do we love the people that God has made? Do we love each and every human being with the dignity with which we have promised to treat them? Because Jesus, we think and believe and profess, died for every human being. Brothers and sisters, that story is for us. Listen carefully. You know, when I was growing up, I was a server and a sometime chorister. We used to be dragged over from the parochial school to sing funerals. And in those days, they were in Latin. And the very last antiphon that was sung at a funeral translates simply into this: may the angels come to welcome you. May the angels come to take you. May the martyrs come to welcome you to that holy city, which is the new and eternal Jerusalem, and where Lazarus, poor no longer, may you have eternal rest. That is what we earnestly desire. Then we need to notice Lazarus. We need to change our values. We need to align them with those of the gospel. We need simply to follow Jesus.